thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Tuesday morning. Still to come, Congressman Robert Aderholt in about an hour from now, and Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall in the 11 o'clock hour. We hear from him every Tuesday. But joining us now, friend of the program, always a delight to get him. I got to know him really well when I was up in Huntsville over the years. But State Senator Arthur Orr joins us on the line. He's the chairman of the Education Trust Fund in the Alabama Senate. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, good to be with you. I kind of wish I were in Baldwin, Mobile County this morning. A little cold up here in the Northland today.
It's still jacket weather here, but it's just that kind of Mobile cold. I don't know how to describe it. It's not unbearable, but it is not seasonable, if you would, either. But anyway, let's kick it off here. How has the off season been? It doesn't seem quite as frantic as this last time around, but you had a lot of new members and we'll try to figure out what to do with a surplus and ARPA and all that a year ago. But right now seems a little tamer.
Well, I think it's the calm before the storm, because if I had the tea leaves out, I would predict we're probably going to be taking up some controversial subjects, like you heard the speaker talk about gaming, and that may be back in a large way. And then, quite frankly, Jeff, there's some issues that we have not dealt with, such as critical race theory and other items that we need to, as a conservative legislature, we need to go into the fray and represent the people that sent us to Montgomery to make conservative choices. So when issues like that pop up and we'll be voting on them, there'll be a lot of controversy, I'm sure.
Right. And you did have I need to mention this. There was kind of a change, Senator Schofield going to the BCA and, Senator Livingston now going to be the majority leader. Do you see any significant changes coming out of that?
No, I don't. The majority leader is, you know, an elected position. And as a result, they serve at the pleasure of the Republican conference or caucus. And so therefore, you know, he will do kind of what the majority wants to do in the caucus. And as I talked to my fellow caucus members, as I intimated earlier, there's a real desire to take on some of these issues. I mean, you just look at them, you know, libraries, DEI in the colleges and universities across the state. You can go down a list, and there's a long list of items that we need to address, or at least we need to discuss and debate and make serious, thoughtful decisions on these going forward.
Well, the ones I hear and the big three seem to be, you mentioned gaming, but that seems like every year, Senator, to be honest. Ethics, you're hearing a little bit about taking a look at that, which is like a third rail when it's been tried in the past. And then the one that you're probably hear a lot about is school choice. How reasonable do you think those three are getting some kind of resolution?
I would think, given Governor Ivey's public statements about school choice, I would see that one probably having the highest likelihood of passage. I'm certainly sympathetic and receptive to looking at our ethics laws. You know, had a commission that I instituted back before COVID, and we came out with some recommendations. And when I tried to get them passed, it was, as you said, the third rail. It's easier discussed than performed, but there are some cleanup matters and measures that we need to and should take in our ethics code. And then as far as gaming, having someone of the speaker's level interested in this topic, it leads me to believe the conversations will be much more serious and much more deliberative than they have been in years past.
Well, that seems to be the difference here, that the House seems like it's kind of taking the lead, whereas you guys in the past, the Senate, have gotten stuff passed, and it just kind of gets put off on the back burner or forgotten about in the House when it's sitting downstairs. So that seems to be a one variable here, going to try that approach.
That's right. And I think both chambers, to defend the House, which I'm not quick to do, but take, for example, the critical race theory bill, that's passed the House a couple times, but not passed in the Senate. So there's always some good finger pointing that can happen on both sides of the ledger. But it seems, as you suggest, that the other chamber that maybe has fumbled in years past on various issues is ready to get serious about passing some of these bills that passed the first chamber pretty handily.
Well, and I know this could be a touchy subject, but I mean, you have two members, Roger Smitherman and Bobby Singleton, who commandeer a lot of time on the floor, which seems to be kind of the impediment to a lot of the things you're talking about. Is that just, or is that, or are we looking at that ever changing, or are you just going to have to work around it, you think?
Well, I don't think it changes, and they're doing what I used to do with when the Republicans were in the minority. You delay, obstruct, do all you can to keep the majority from passing its agenda. And every day you're able to burn as you get towards the finish line of the session is a successful day. So that's the playbook that the minority party usually has. And then if you run over them, and that's certainly possible as well for the majority Republicans to run over the minority party, then their consequences. Other days will be lost and burned because of slowdowns and filibusters. So all of it has to be strategized, and we've got a good leader in Pro Tem Greg Reed, and so we'll strategize and go forward, realizing that the opposition won't take the things that they oppose lying down. They'll fight them, and we'll be ready to deal with that.
Joined by State Senator Arthur Orr here on the program. So, before we get into what I asked you to come on about, let's talk grocery tax real quick. You see in some of the early projections, some of the estimates, some of the accounts that show, obviously, the Treasury's taking a hit here. But is it going as expected as far as that goes?
I think so. The rider that I put on the bill in the Senate that was worked out and agreed to, that we didn't want a $150 million hit in a down revenue year. So, we have to have year-over-year growth of 3.5% for the second penny to drop. And that thing, that was prudent on our behalf, because we've seen revenues, Jeff, decrease substantially, reverting back to the mean. And that's what we anticipated, but we don't have the explosive growth that we've had in the last 2 to 3 years that led to a lot of surplus spending, et cetera, that we've been able to, spend around the state with one-time money. So all that to say, our October numbers with the grocery tax were less than expected. The hit to the ETF was about $9 million, but the thinking is some of the grocers may not have, they may have collected the tax anyway and not reduced it by a penny. So we'll see what happens as the months come in.
So you want to extend a tax cut to, according to a Daily News article here, to talking about feminine hygiene products, diapers, baby wipes, and let's see, even breast pumps, baby bottles, and other equipment. As a young father here, or father of a young child, I can appreciate what's going on here. But talk a little bit about this proposal and why now is the time for it.
Well, it came to my attention. I went to a tax policy conference here in the last month or so, and they threw up on the board the states that were still taxing these feminine products, and in another slide, those that were still taxing items related to infants and babies and childcare. And it just, it seemed on two fronts. One, you know, we're taxing women to be women, you know, something that men don't have to fool with or have or purchase. And, you know, that certainly struck me as unfair and something that we ought to look at. And then on the other shoe, other foot, we see, you know, Alabama being a very pro-life state, but here we're taxing items related to children and infants and having babies, et cetera. If we want to encourage a culture of life, why are we taxing it? And I'm not talking about just the state. If we exempt this at the state level, the locals and their taxes have to go away. So what we're looking at here, Jeff, depending on the local rate, anywhere between 9% and 11% of taxation going away on these various items. And that's significant that people are having to pay today, and we need to do away with it. The fiscal note, the cost of this, all in a little over $20 million. Most of that, 12 or so, is at the local level, and about $10 million at the state level. We can certainly afford it, and if you bust it up across the cities and counties across the state, they can afford that kind of number as well. The economy is growing. We're still doing okay here economically, but we need to remove the taxes on those in those two particular areas.
So you don't think that the state will be asked to reimburse the cities and counties or anything like that on something this small?
Day? Well, if they want to squeeze the, you know, these particular areas, they ought to be ashamed of themselves. You know, if they don't see it similarly. I did learn in the last 24 hours, a House member has been working on legislation along these lines. So look forward to discussing with him and seeing how we can attack this issue and get it addressed in the next session. And I wouldn't predict a lot of opposition, certainly not in the Senate. I don't know what the problem's been in the House, but we can certainly get something through this next session.
Well, and you know, the usual suspects, there's a lot of entities in Montgomery, Senator, that don't like any tax cut, it seems, at times, and they're very protective of this money, but this one doesn't. This one seems, they'll throw it out third rail-y to try to say that you oppose.
Well, we need to be careful because when you're talking education dollars and or any tax dollars, but on the education side, that is the future of our state. We need to fund our schools and universities, colleges, junior colleges. We need to fund them as best we can, but we certainly need to be wise about it. And like I said, the taxes in these two areas is something we can afford, and we don't need to be charging 10-11% on people who have new babies in the house. Again, if we're trying to be a pro-life state, seems a bit hypocritical to me. And then taxing products that women have to have at certain ages, you know, that also seems a bit unfair and something we can reconcile without a lot of impact on the education funding across the state.
How does that? I mean, we've been hitting that ETF mark pretty hard. Pretty solidly over the last few years. And you mentioned the grocery tax taking a hit, but it doesn't look like. We may not have surpluses, but you don't think we're in any danger here, do you?
We put back a good bit of money, and we even established an additional savings account this past legislative session. We have not budgeted to the estimates, and since the Republicans have took over in Montgomery going back to the 2011 cycle, we have not had proration in this state, Jeff, which is something that anybody that's been in education would be for an extended period of time would be familiar with. But fortunately, we put back a whole lot of money. We even had a stress test done by an outside national organization recently of what would happen if revenues went down 5%, 10%, et cetera. How would we fare over a period of 2 to 3 years? And we passed the test with flying colors. So, if there's an economic disaster, all bets are off. But with a moderate recession, we're in pretty good shape, particularly compared to other states.
Is that still the outlook? I mean, we heard a lot about this about a year ago, especially with the surplus and what to do with it. We need to put some away for the rainy day. Are we going through that now, you think, or beginning to see it? Where do you think we are as far as the economy goes?
We're going to see it in the upcoming budgets. Now, we're not going red based on the current projections, and we don't really get cranked up until February. But we will not have big budget growth, year over year. It'll be very moderate, and in fact, we've even capped how fast we can grow. So if we have another period of great growth, we'll take some proceeds, but we're not going to take them all and blow them. And that's what the Democrats used to do when they were in the supermajority in Montgomery. They just appropriate to the revenue estimates, and when those estimates were not fulfilled or we didn't hit our mark, they cut everything, and that was proration, and we whipsawed education for decades in this state where, in education, most of the spending is people. Most of it's teachers, staff, support staff, et cetera, and there are very little areas to cut when you have to prorate your budget 5% or 7% or whatever it was.
Senator, you're always very kind to this audience to make time for us. We always do appreciate it. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. You have a good rest of the week.
All right, you stay warm up there. All right, that was State Senator Arthur Orr. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Why must you live?